This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on what is going to be a very busy Thursday afternoon. Matt and Patrick here. Hi, Patrick. How are you doing?
Good. Not throwing it away like the Twins did yesterday.
Don't even. How dare you bring up that? That wound hasn't healed yet. Dear Lord, what was that? What was that? Anyway, here's what we're going to do. First of all, the Twins are off today, so I don't have to worry about pulling out what little hair I have left. I want to make sure we mention, Patrick, you were telling me we're getting ready for this big Earth Day celebration with Robert Pilot and crew coming up at 6 o'clock, right?
Yep, 6 o'clock. It's a two-hour special with Robert and the gang, bunch of featured musical artists, headlined by the Indigo Girls, a number of other musical acts tonight. That's 6 to 8, commercial-free here on AM 950 Native Roots Radio.
The Indigo Girls. How did they... That's a nice get. I mean, Metsa doesn't even return my calls, for God's sakes.
Paul's a good person. I'm just giving him grief.
The Indigo Girls? Dang! That's nice. Now, I think I can trumpet in my show in about 25 minutes right now. Santita Jackson's going to join us. The Morning Drive with Santita Jackson, Monday through Friday, here at 6 to 8 a.m. I have been wanting to get Santita on the air. She is kind enough to join us today. We'll talk to her. Sven Sundgaard will join us, talk some weather stuff, more chance of snow again? I got to talk to him about that. But we're going to start off today, Patrick. We have a bit of a mystery on our hands. Actually, I don't think it's much of a mystery, but I think we know who this person is. But there is a story that was out with the news outlet The Insider. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. It's kind of one of the fringe online groups.
I don't know that outlet.
I didn't either until I saw this story. And then all of a sudden I got intrigued. Yesterday we had talked about, we were glad about the Department of Justice investigation into the Minneapolis Police Department because, frankly, the reason why we are at the point where we're at is because of Bob Kroll's leadership of the police union and how they corrupted the entire force. And once again, I'll put it this way, and I'll be blunt. I mean, if you are a police officer, your first concern should not be making sure you cover up for other cops when they pull a crime. It should be protecting, serving, making sure laws are followed, making sure people are brought to justice. And if that happens to be a cop, you don't just turn your head and say, I didn't see anything here. And we made some movements in this trial where had police officers testifying as like, no, he was wrong. He should not have – Derek Chauvin should not have driven his knee into the back of George Floyd. And so there are some changes here. But, the Department of Justice is going to have a good long look at the Minneapolis Police Department. And without a doubt in my mind, we're going to find out a lot of the ugly that's been going on there. But Bob Kroll, of course, was the former head of the union. He disappeared from the scene quite abruptly. He was going to resign in May. And then all of a sudden in about mid-January, he said he was going to resign at the end of January. Now, this is relevant to a point. I could swear I read a story which said his actual final date would be in February, late February, because of accrued vacation and time off. I could be wrong. I'll be the first to say I could be wrong on that. I could not find that story, but I could have sworn that his last day was, and then this happens a lot, your last day is here, but if you got 3 weeks of vacation you have built up over time, you burn off your vacation, you get paid for that, you don't come back into the office, that sort of thing. I could have sworn that was the case. But needless to say, you'll see where I'm going with this now. So we'd wonder, where is Bob Kroll? I mean, we were waiting for him to kind of come on out because, reminder, right after Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd. We can say that without any alleged or anything like that because he's been convicted three times. He murdered George Floyd in the street wearing a badge. After the, right after that happened, Bob Kroll came on out and was very, you know, how dare anyone question the police? These people deserve their job back. And something about him and Paul Gazelka wanting to be in charge of the state. I don't know. That sounds like kind of an overthrow of the state-elected government. But, hey, that thing is, seems to be going around on the right now. Anywho, we were wondering, where has been Bob Kroll? And this is why this story kind of piqued my interest a little bit. I'll read from the insider story. What was a day of justice for the Black Lives Matter movement was a day of disappointment for one former Minneapolis police officer who told the insider he was shocked, he says. Now, I added that part, by Derek Chauvin's conviction and called it a tragedy. The former officer spoke on the condition of anonymity, coward, but his identity is known to insider. He worked for the Minneapolis Police Department for nearly three decades before quitting days before Chauvin's trial began. Now, let me just look at this, because once again, it's who could this possibly be? In his letter to the police union in mid-January, saying he was going to leave at the end of January, he actually said he was one of only 10 police officers who had worked for the department for three decades. So there's only a handful of people this could be. He also says he quit. He didn't retire. He quit, which also falls into the Bob Kroll category. The Chauvin trial officially began on March 8th. That's when the beginning of the motions was happening, as well as the beginning of the jury selection. Now, here's go back to the story where I said I could have sworn his actual last day was in February. I read it. I could have sworn I did. I could be wrong on that, but I could have sworn they said his actual last day was in February. Well, if you say your last day was, say, February 24th, the trial starts in March 8th, well, that's merely days before the trial begins. So I'm kind of starting to get an idea. It could be someone we know. Rhymes with Rob Ball, Crawl, Ball, something like that. Anywho, could it be Bob? I don't know. Let's see if there's any other hints within the story, shall we? Insider spoke with him less than 24 hours after a jury found his former colleague guilty of murder and manslaughter charges in the May 2020 killing of George Floyd. Floyd, a black man, died after Chauvin knelt on his neck for minutes while trying to arrest him. Nine minutes and 29 seconds. While trying to arrest him on suspicion of passing a fake $20 bill. Floyd's death reinvigorated the Black Lives Matter movement and set off a worldwide protest. In the previous interview, the former officer said he believed Floyd died of drug overdose because of the amount of fentanyl that was in his system. But experts testify in the trial that Floyd's death was because of lack of oxygen caused by Chauvin's pressure on his neck. Now, wait a second here. Boy, that sounds like using drug use to character assassinate the victim. Boy, where have I heard that kind of talk before? I'm trying to think of which officer constantly character assassinated victims of excessive force. They were gangbangers. They were druggies. I'm sensing a pattern here. And by the way, is it amazing here the insider hasn't said that this former cop, this coward of a man who won't use, or I'm presuming it's a man, won't use his own real name in the story. What a coward. Pulled out his butt that drugs killed him. It was drugs. I don't know if you caught the trial there, anonymous cop. But the experts that testified said there was so little drugs in the system, it didn't really matter. So, no, it wasn't drug overdose, you lying bastard. Well, or just misinformed bastard. How about I say it like that? Huh? Okay, great. All right, moving on. Once again, trying to figure out, is this anonymous cop? Could this be Bob Kroll? We don't know. The former officer said the jury finding Chauvin guilty on all three charges was not all what he expected and called it a tragedy. kind of blind allegiance to the officers, even though we have a 9-minute and 29-second tape of Chauvin murdering George Floyd. Boy, that sounds familiar, too. The jury got it wrong, I believe. But you got to respect their decision, the former officer said. No, the jury didn't. You see, this is the whole concept of a jury. It's not one guy, like, I don't know, Derek Chauvin, who drives his knee into the back of George Floyd's neck and kills him on the street, Chicago Avenue, in South Minneapolis, where one man. This is the reason we have a trial, is we have a jury listen to all the evidence, and then they can make a decision, which they did in record time there. All three, guilty, guilty, guilty. He added that one of his coworkers described Chauvin as a sacrificial lamb. No, 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 no. Stop it. Stop it, anonymous cop. Sacrificial lamb, no, that was George Floyd with your warrior training rage cop mentality that existed in the Minneapolis police force. He clearly was the sacrificial lamb. You killed him in the street. He was murdered, by the way, in case you missed it. Verdict from Tuesday, guilty, guilty, guilty. He indeed did murder George Floyd while wearing a badge. The former officer said he especially shocked at how quickly the jury deliberated just over 10 hours before delivering the guilty verdict. When they came back that quick, I knew he was screwed. I knew it, he said. I've never seen in all my years of work a jury come back that quick with such serious charges. Never, he said. He felt the jury was under tremendous pressure to make it right for George Floyd. Well, okay, let's stop and unpack that one for a quick sec. They were quick because he was guilty, and there's a 9-minute and 29-second video of him murdering George Floyd in the street. They saw it. They had experts. They even had police officers saying, yeah, that was uncalled for. Medical professionals, they went through the entire gamut, and they made a pretty darn solid case. So the reason why this came back quick was because he was guilty as hell. How about that there, anonymous cop? He was guilty as hell. Anywho. By the way, was under tremendous pressure to make it right for George Floyd? Yeah, because they saw the evidence of what happened and realized George Floyd was murdered. Did you hear the verdict? I don't think anonymous cop heard the verdict. Murder. He murdered him. Two counts of murder, by the way, and a count of manslaughter. He murdered him in the street. So, yeah, they were trying to make it right for the victim. I understand that you cops don't understand those concepts sometimes, but George Floyd was the victim here. The courthouse and surrounding area were fortified throughout the trial. The jury was sequestered at a hotel throughout the deliberations. A new trend of sending officers to prison. The former officer said he's glad that he left policing. He says he believes the Chauvin decision could result in more officers going to jail in the future, especially when officers involved in the recent police killings in Chicago, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, and Columbus, Ohio. Yeah, if they commit crimes like murder, yeah, they should probably go to jail. They should. And once again, here we are with this, Mr. Which cop in the past has basically said that no actions by police officers should be reviewable for any reason? Well, that's something that I could have sworn I heard something similar to that coming from some gaseous windbag with a god-awful mustache. I can't remember what his name was. Someone saying it. Some ass. Anywho, it's the new trend now. They're sending cops to prison, he said. The three other officers who were on the scene in Chauvin's fatal arrest will be tried together later this year. When asked what he would say to Chauvin and his family if given the opportunity, the former officer said he would want them to know he's sorry. God. It's got to be. It's got to be Bob Kroll. It's just got to. God, what a crass jackass. Crass jackass is like the, if you look that up in the dictionary, there's a picture of Bob, for goodness sakes. It's God, I would tell him he's sorry. Would you say anything to the Floyd family? Yeah. Would you say I'm sorry to them? Probably not, because you convinced the drugs took him out, but that wasn't the case. It was actually Derek Chauvin. The whole thing is a tragedy, said George Floyd. Dying is a tragedy for sure. Oh, he does come back and say that. Okay, I'll make sure we anonymous cop does say George Floyd dying is a tragedy for sure. What happened to Chauvin's family and his wife is horrible. You know, just look at Derek. I mean, that's kind of the problem there. The whole thing is sad. It's really upsetting to me. The former officer said it's a lose-lose deal for everyone. Kelly Chauvin, by the way, in this story says requested a divorce last May, which was granted in February. I thought that that was still pending because they were convinced that this was a quickie divorce to try to preserve as much of Chauvin's personal wealth before the civil trial went and took everything from them. Well, maybe, I don't know. You should have, I don't know, when you had a cop that had so many complaints against him, maybe we shouldn't have had a union that was running defense for them and preventing any kind of real reprimand and additional training from happening. Maybe we should have had a union that was actually caring about making sure the cops that they had were doing the right thing. I don't know. It smells like Bob Kroll. Ugh. Ugh. Yikes. I don't know, but we'll have to wait from the next story from Anonymous Cop. I put five. It's Kroll. I mean, it's the fact that he said he was there for three decades. He quit. And then the trial, I mean, it's almost like a confession at that point. It's almost like a confession. You can put your name with it next time, Bob. All right. You know, and I guess, you know, if this is how you really feel, isn't you being anonymous just the coward's way out? I mean, wouldn't a man with integrity and a spine and guts, wouldn't they actually admit they were the person making these comments? Just an observation. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Damn, that feels good. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Santita Jackson will be joining us. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. How good was the prosecution in presenting the case against Derek Chauvin? Well, an alternate juror for the trial of Derek Chauvin said she completely agreed with the jury's decision to convict him in George Floyd's death, saying she saw Chauvin as the leader of officers at the scene and that he brushed off warnings by bystanders that Floyd was in danger. I felt he was guilty, said Lisa Christensen on CBS This Morning in a story aired on Thursday. I didn't know if it was going to be guilty on all counts, but I would have said guilty. Christensen was one of two alternates. She was dismissed by Judge Cahill on Monday after the closing arguments. The remaining 12 jurors voted unanimously very quickly, anonymous cop, voted very unanimously very quickly on Tuesday to convict Chauvin on all counts, second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. The identities of jurors and alternates are protected under the judge's order, and Christensen is the first to publicly speak out. Chauvin, 45, was by far the most senior officer on the scene. Prosecutors said he pinned Floyd to the pavement. Well, prosecutors didn't say. The jury found him guilty of pinning Floyd to the pavement outside of Cup Foods, where Floyd had been accused of passing a $20 bill, a counterfeit $20 bill. He was pinned for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. Three other officers since fired also faced trial in August. Still, and by the way, it is pretty interesting to wonder how quickly – if you're one of those other three officers and you just saw how quickly Derek Chauvin got thrown into jail, especially here's the one officer I think about is Tao. He was the one that did the snarky "Don't do drugs, kids," as George Floyd was being killed. If any of the other three is really got the ire of Minneapolis against them, it's Tao. And my guess would be is if I'm Tao, you weren't on top of George Floyd. At this point, your police career is over. I understand I don't believe the union's paying for your lawyer. It's the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, I believe that is, who's paying for the lawyers here. So if you're looking to cut a deal, you know, now's the tick-tock. I'd be calling the Attorney General's office on that. And saying what's on the table. I felt like he was the leader. This is going back to Christensen, Lisa Christensen, who was one of the alternates. I felt like he was the leader, and the other officers followed his lead, Christensen said. I kind of felt like he wasn't taking the warning seriously, obviously kind of like, I know what I'm doing. And Christensen described her impressions of Chauvin. Every time I would look up, he was right in my vision. So we locked eyes quite a few times, and it was pretty uncomfortable. Yeah, the dude does. He's a Spielberg villain, isn't he? Prosecutors played a wide range of videos for the jury, including teenager Darnella Frazier's bystander camera that would have seen worldwide in the hours after Floyd's death. A video of the officer's body camera captured bystanders shouting at Chauvin and the other officers to get off Floyd, warning that they were cutting off his breathing and asking them to check for a pulse. Of course, once again, the off-duty fire officer who was on the scene, who, of course, the defense kind of threw under the bus. But needless to say, there you go, number 13. The 13th juror is that, oh, yeah, he was guilty. So don't act like you're, oh, I can't believe this. No, you don't want to believe it, anonymous cop. Anonymous cop, you don't want to believe that Derek Chauvin was guilty. That's why you're acting incredulous. He's guilty. Oh, he was guilty. We all knew he was guilty. I think we all were ecstatic that finally, yeah, I saw this. It was the first time in the history of Minnesota that a white cop was found guilty of a crime, of a murder against a African-American man for the first time ever. And we said this after the Muhammad Noor trial, and I want to go back to that again really quick if I can, where we said, you know, wait a minute here. Is this the standard that it's a black cop and he kills a white woman? That then we'll call him guilty, but what happens, and we asked this back in 2019, what happens when you have a white cop on camera, undeniable evidence that they murdered someone either the same way as Muhammad Noor or worse, will they be held accountable? And I think, you know, one thing I think anonymous cop is getting is, yeah, the day and age of cops basically getting to skate, especially in the city of Minneapolis, they're over. They're over. And more, you know, all you need is more evidence of that. As a spokeswoman for the citizens' petition drive to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department says the coalition has gathered more than 20,000 signatures, 8,000 more than needed, and will file the petition on April 30th. Karina Smith, campaign manager for Yes for Minneapolis, said the coalition has spent the past few weeks verifying signatures itself before officially filing the petition with the city elections offices. If the signatures are verified as registered voter signatures, Minneapolis voters would vote in November on eliminating the police department and creating a new public safety agency that would take the public health approach to safety. For God's sakes, Bob Kroll, you did such a bad job as the union leader. I mean, and really, and I've said this yesterday, because you were only using it for political power. You loved how it got you in with Trump, and you loved how the Republicans in the state would snuggle up to you because you would badmouth the Minneapolis area to try to help their campaigns. But because you were so crappy as a union leader, your entire police department is going to get wiped out and rebuilt because of how bad your leadership was. Suck on that. The agency would include armed police, as state law requires, but certain duties be formed by licensed peace officers. The group's website said police would not disappear with a yes vote. It would just give the city more options and safety than a police-only model. To do that, voters will decide whether to amend the city charter, which is like a constitution. The city council is also pushing a similar charter amendment, but the two are working together, and council members said they would drop theirs if the citizens' petition drive succeeds. Well, in this charter commission, I understand that you guys might think to yourself, well, we can kind of stymie the city council, but if you've got enough votes, enough signatures to push this through and you guys still knock it down, well, good luck, because I can tell you right now, the citizens of Minneapolis all of a sudden are going to find a new villain to go after, and that's going to be the Charter Commission. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we do return, the morning drive, Santita Jackson joins us. We'll talk about some of the news, of course, obviously the verdict, Dante Wright, also other stories as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Reminder, Native Roots Radio, 6 to 8, a special Earth Day broadcast Robert Pilot, Wendy, Ogama, plus, of course, Indigo Girls are going to be joining them. A special two-hour broadcast coming up after this show right here on AM 950. If you're listening to In the Mornings, that's, of course, the time you'll hear the morning drive with Santita Jackson, 6 to 8 a.m. right here on AM 950. Santita is kind enough to join us today to talk about some of the issues going on in the country right now. Santita, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, Matthew, I'm so honored to be with you.
No, I am actually honored to be with you. You are a bit of a media legend in Chicago. You're already building up a fan base here. I'm actually hearing from listeners as I speak about how much they like you. Santita is amazing. Thank you for having her on in the morning. Thank you for being here. It's so nice for you to be in Minneapolis, St. Paul with us.
I love you all. I love you. Look, I never thought that I'd be in the place where they have the First Avenue Club in Purple Rain. So I'm so excited. Oh. And Chad Larson, you all are just, this is a wonderful family, AM 950 Radio, and I'm so touched to be a part of it.
Oh, it's great to have you on the air because it's just so wonderful to have the diverse range of voices speaking to the people, because it doesn't do us any good just to have, you know, almost one kind of mentality, aka Fox News. But it doesn't have us. We have a variety, and I think that's such an important element. We have to get you up here. I'm actually hearing from other people, when is she coming to the Twin Cities? So we'll have to get you up here at some point when the coronavirus and the pandemic's all done here.
Well, you know, we'll figure that out, very, very soon, because in fact, I've been having, like Pastor Jerry McAfee, on the show and Spike Moss, who really shaped the programs that helped to shape Prince and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Gary Hines of Sounds of Blackness. So we have a lot of ties, in the Minneapolis St. Paul community that go back, almost 50 years, quite frankly. And so we've been talking and, Chad Larson and I have been trying to figure out how to get up there. But I think we can figure out something very soon. I really do, because I think it's important for us to, while we might be physically distant, we shouldn't be socially distant. And I have to thank the AM 950 radio audience and you, Matthew, for being so embracing of these different perspectives that I've been trying to bring to the Minneapolis St. Paul and really to progressive radio, right? I mean, because this is more than Minneapolis St. Paul and Chicago and Madison and Milwaukee and Los Angeles, because we have people who are really looking for us in this moment. They're looking to hear, not just because of what's been happening, the challenges facing Minneapolis, St. Paul, because quite frankly, the challenges facing Brooklyn Center and Minneapolis, St. Paul are ones that we feel in Chicago, that we feel in Los Angeles, that we feel in Mobile, that we feel in Atlanta, New York, et cetera, et al. And even I have people who tune in from Brazil, for example, and from different parts of Africa, just because I've reached out, because the progressive movement in the United States and this movement for human rights means so much to everybody everywhere with all of our challenges, even with those. We are a beacon of light unto the rest of the world, and they're pulling for us to really make it. And that's a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful thing. And so we have to keep up the fight. And that's why I really admire the work that you're doing, because it means so much for all of these people to have a voice, and your show gives people that.
And I'm now blushing.
Good, I love it.
We have to talk about what has been going on, because it's been a roller coaster week is an understatement. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Derek Chauvin verdict, guilty, guilty, guilty. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately after that, we have a murder by another a child in Columbus, Ohio, killed by a cop. Mm-hmm. As that's happening, you're in Chicago. You're dealing with the Adam Toledo story that's down there. Yeah. And, of course, then we're still up here dealing with Dante Wright, where we just had the funeral today for Dante Wright. I think one of the things that was interesting from my perspective is as I watched these guilty, 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 and people were happy, there did seem to be an understanding that this is good, this is great, we're getting some justice for George Floyd, but if we're really going to change the system, this is the first step on a very long journey that is ahead of us.
Oh, yes, and the climb is steep. I mean, because we have accountability even more than justice, right? I mean, I think that's what Trayvon Martin's family have been looking for.
Yeah.
Tamir Rice's mother has been looking for accountability. You need someone to be held responsible, and those persons who are responsible need to say, I'm sorry. And so in this moment, a lot of, you know, that's what I think, that's probably, if I may say this, Matthew, this is one of the gifts of this pandemic. So much that has gone undiscussed, so much that we have not wanted to really deal with, we're now being faced with, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think James Baldwin, I don't want to mess up his quote, but, you know, all problems, you cannot, all, you, you know, we all have problems that we've got to face, but nothing can resolve until we face these problems. And that's paraphrasing, and he puts it far more elegantly than I did. You know, when we look at Dante Wright, on a traffic stop, did he have to die? No. Did George Floyd have to die? No. Did Makia have to die?
No.
No. But you know what? I think we've got to expand the conversation, Matthew, because while statistically this is more likely to happen to black and brown people, numerically it happens to more white people. Of course, there are more white people in the United States, but this is an American problem. It's a human problem. And we're going to have to resolve or really deal with how the people we endow with power handle that power. This is a power issue. Of mm-hmm. course, racism is in it. Misogyny is in it. All of the isms are in it. But we've got to have a real conversation about power and why we are so quick to kill, Matthew. You know, we have had, since I think I read in the New York Times, April 17th, from March 29th, the day before the start of the Derek Chauvin trial, until April 17th, three police killings per day mm-hmm. in the United States. At that point, by the 17th of April, it was up to 64. And the numbers have continued to climb. So, I mean, and when you look at what's happening in Minneapolis, you see that even though blacks are only 19% of the population, last year, 64% of the forceful handlings by police were of black people. But those numbers have really have been unchanged in the last year. That number is still at, that percentage is still at 62%. So something is off here, right? And that's racialized. But there's a reason that on 38th in Chicago, you had white people who pulled out their phones, who said, wait. In real time, they said, something is not right here. You can't treat another human being this way. So I see growth. But I also know that because Makia was just killed, because Dante, we were still in the midst of the trial. This young man, barely a young man, who has a his child will never see him again. Mm. His child must rely on the reminiscences of his siblings. You now have two parents. You have a family that will never be the same. You have two parents who have broken hearts. You see Dante's parents today at that funeral, it broke my heart. I've got three brothers and a sister. They can drive me crazy, Matthew. We drive each other crazy. And if we got them, if we were all on here right now, that's what we would say. Oh, we can drive each other crazy. But I love them with all of my heart. I cannot imagine while my brother is asking for a car that's not his, if he calls me and says, hey, where are the insurance papers? Or, you know, the deed. I've got to prove to them that this is my car. It's not been stolen. Because when black people encounter the police, we also know that it could be deadly. We always do, whether we're male or female. That should not be in the United States. And I think that it's important for this not to be a black problem, for it not to be a black challenge, because it is. Thank you, Theodore Dreiser. It's an American dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting, and by the way, we talked a lot about the fact when Dante Wright, when that story broke, is that when black people are pulled over, it's, is this your car? When white people get pulled over, it's, do you know what you did there, fella? You know, and there is that difference. And the fact that mere fact that in the state of Minnesota, where they put a hold on renewing registration tabs on cars because of the pandemic, there are thousands of cars running around without their tabs on it. The fact that they would pull someone over under that justification is there. And it brings up an interesting point, because you're right. This is a justice for all issue. But with what you're seeing here in the case of George Floyd is that what the African-American community has been saying for decades, really since the Civil War, is true, that the way that they've been treated is unfair, it's unjust, and it's just plain wrong. We are now getting more and more evidence of that. But the reality is we have a lot of people in power who might not condone what happened to George Floyd or like what happened, but the reality is they like the fact that the police treat certain peoples that way. And until you can cleanse that toxin out of these police departments, I you know, that is where you have to start. You have to go into the police departments and say, are you for justice? Are you for following the law? Or are you for police first, uber alles? And that cannot stand anymore.
Well, you know, we also have to understand the origins of the police. The police started with they're the slave patrols. And so, and what is slavery? Slavery really is about corporate power. You know, black people did not work for free. We were unpaid labor, which is why, you know, we have the reparations discussion today. So they have always protected corporate power. So, you know, and the police has been put in between, a disgruntled, dissatisfied citizenry and the 1%. That was true then, and that's true today. I'm not absolving the police of any responsibility because they do have a toxic culture that needs to be acknowledged and that needs to be dealt with. But the fact is, yeah, black people have been saying this for quite some time, that there is a problem here. And now, you know, there's an old expression, Matthew, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm.
I think now America is mature enough to have these conversations because the teacher is here. Makia is here. Mm-hmm. Dante is here. George is here. Tamir is here. Trayvon is here. We can keep on. I mean, I'm so sad that I've got Adam Toledo. I mean, he's 13 years of age. He complied. He died. If he did have a gun, he dropped it. In a split second, he drops a gun, allegedly, but he has his hands in there and you shoot him? Why four shots for Makia? Why not just one? Okay, I've heard some police officers say that a taser would not work in a situation in which we're seeing the employment of or the employing of deadly force. Okay, but four shots?
You know. Yeah, exactly. There's a misunderstanding of what their job is and what that ramp up is, because you can go back to Dante Wright, and by the way, you can Jamar Clark, Philando Castile, Minneapolis itself has got so many, it's unbelievable. But you have this case. Okay, so the guy jumps in his car and he drives away. What's the big deal? I mean, it's tabs and an air freshener, for goodness sakes, and a misdemeanor warrant, not a federal a more serious warrant, just a misdemeanor. And, you know, the fact that their automatic response is this gun, you know, the militarization, the warrior training, all this mentality is wrong. I think one of the hardest things that's going to have to happen, though, and I'm going to say this as the white guy, all right, and that is the mentality of a lot of people in America is that we can make change, and they kind of that white savior thing. They want to, you know, we'll fix this. They fall in love with the movies and stuff like this. The reality is this is one of those cases where what we have learned is that we need to do this all together. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the minority groups who have been telling us the truth the entire time, and now we have copious amounts of evidence of the truth, that they are really – we need to kind of the white community needs to step back and let them drive, and we go along with them, because the reality is that we can't understand, we can't solve a problem that for the most part white America just doesn't fundamentally understand.
But you know, but white America created it, so white America, quite frankly, I think white America has to drive this.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ask me about racism; I'm on the receiving end of it. There are some fundamental changes that white America, I think. White America must make these changes. And I think that particularly young people, they're ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you saw these white Americans pull out their cameras. You saw the white EMT come up to the police officers, and she was pleading with them. And you saw when she testified, she was furious. You could see her pain and anger and anguish. almost a year later. So I think that what white people have to do is open your heart, your ear to me, and let me tell you how I feel. You can't tell me how I'm supposed to feel.
Yeah.
You can't tell me how I'm supposed to react, but you need to listen to and understand my experience, because guess what? I heard Lonnie Guinier, who was nominated to be an assistant attorney general during the Clinton years, brilliant legal scholar. She gave a speech in which she talked about African Americans being the canaries in the mine. And, you know, you send the canary down in the mine to see if there's too much gas. And if the canary comes up alive or and well, you know you can send the miners down and to do their work. But if the canary comes back passed out or dead, it's too gaseous. What happens to African Americans, what's happened to the indigenous people, it's happened to us first, it happens to us first, but eventually it happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. My great grandmother Tibby used to say, you know, it's an old black expression, Matthew, look, that the old folks used to have. She would have been past, way past 100 had she been living. She would have been about 150 years of age. And she said, you know, when white folk get a cold, she didn't say folk, she said folk. Mm-hmm. When white folk get a cold, black folk get pneumonia. Mm-hmm. But if you don't treat the pneumonia, eventually your cold is going to turn into pneumonia and we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dr. King spoke to the triplets of militarism, racism, and what's it? Racism, militarism, and classism. These things are going to destroy us. Militarism, racism, classism. These things are destroying us right now. And what I think, what as white people mature, they can understand that, you know, the original idea of our republic did not include the average white person. The unpropertied white man did not have a vote.
Exactly.
So baked in the cake is inequality for everybody. And but also baked in the cake is a revolutionary spirit in which we can fight to be included and to make a more perfect union.
Like you said, it's a long journey ahead, but it's a steep hill too. We definitely have a long way to go here, but I think we have enough people now that want to make this change, and I think this change is going to happen. And I'll tell you one thing about young people: Generation Z is done with this crap. They want to change things and change things now. So watch Generation Z. I think they're going to make a lot of changes. Santita Jackson, once again, the morning drive 6 to 8 a.m. I got to get down to Chicago. I love Chicago. I got to get down to visit you.
This is nothing but a word. Now, come on. You need to come on in. We're going to have a good time.
I will promise you. I'll tell you what. We'll get you up into Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'll get down to Chicago by all means, okay?
But I want you to come on my show now, Matthew.
By all means.
You let me know. Now, I'm not going to push you too early. If you come on in the 7 o'clock hour, because I don't want you to dislike me now.
No.
I want you to still love me.
I've got a dog, so I'm up anyway, so no problem. I will. Okay. I would love to be on your show. It would be an absolute privilege. Thank you very much. Santita Jackson, The Morning Drive. Listen to it right here Monday through Friday, 6 to 8. Santita, you are welcome back on my show anytime. Please do come back.
Invite me, and I'm here.
Thank you. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hundreds of mourners remembered Dante Wright at a memorial service on Thursday with Reverend Al Sharpton delivering the eulogy for the 20-year-old who was fatally shot by police on April 11th. Wright was fatally shot by now former Brooklyn Center police officer Kim Potter during a traffic stop, and his death spurring protests and even louder calls for police reform and accountability in Minnesota and nationwide. On Thursday, Shiloh Temple International Ministries in Minneapolis, Wright was remembered for who he was and as the latest black man to be killed by police. Family, friends, many wearing red, some with shirts bearing Wright's name, and politicians including Governor Tim Walz and Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, both U.S. Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar attended Wright's memorial service. Others in attendance included family members of other black Minnesotans killed by police, including the family of George Floyd, Jamar Clark, Philando Castile. Wright was described as a warm and loving person who would have do anything for his friends and family. A funeral card said he was also a jokester, a beloved son, a loving father of a 2-year-old, Dante Wright Jr., and a role model. He was born in St. Paul, moved to Minneapolis when he was 7. He attended Edison High School, where he enjoyed playing basketball and cards. So, you know, as we talked with Santita Jackson there, and by the way, if you're not listening to the Santita Jackson Show, what's wrong with you? 6 to 8 a.m. Monday through Friday right here on AM 950. And call and tell her how much you like her. She's fantastic. But, you know, this is a problem that we need to solve this problem. And part of the reason I brought up anonymous cop to begin with is to point out there is an obnoxious pushback right now on this. Like I said, that Derek Chauvin somehow is the 1 pound of flesh we're going to get to solve this problem. We have a long road to go to solve these issues. And it's no longer can it be basically something we ignore or downplay. And as Santita said, it's a steep uphill, a steep uphill. Sven Sundgaard, we got a weather update with him coming up in the next hour, as well as also your callers. Calls. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. We're spotlighting Santita Jackson. Of course, you'll be able to listen to that on the iTunes, the SoundCloud. There's lots of ways for you to listen to this show. I know. You can listen to it live. Of course, we have it on the website. You can listen to it streaming online. And, of course, iTunes, SoundCloud, you have it there. And a lot of people, a shocking amount of people like listening to this show. Suckers. 952-946-6205. Patrick, it's a good time to remind people. We, of course, coming up here, a special Earth Day event with the Native Roots Radio guys, Robert Pilot, Wendy Ogama. They got a special two-hour broadcast tonight.
Yep, 6 to 8 p.m., commercial-free, featured musical artists, including the Indigo Girls, but many more. That'll be from 6 to 8 tonight on Native Roots Radio.
I got my neighbor who's going to talk about how his knee hurts. But, hey, they get the Indigo Girls. Okay, fine. Yeah, sure, fine. That's a nice get. That's a nice get. I got Sven Sundgaard coming up here. That's a pretty good get, too. We'll be talking weather with him coming up here about 5:30. But make sure you're staying with us all the way through the evening until 8 o'clock tonight. Native Roots Radio, special Earth Day broadcast right here on AM 950. Okay, so, Patrick, we have talked about the modified version of the OK sign, which has been co-opted by the white power movement, which is it's an OK sign, but as opposed to doing OK where we used to do it, where the three fingers, your middle finger, your pinky, and the one in between it, they basically stay together. What you're supposed to do, and I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to do it, and it's not going to be counted. You spread those fingers wide, so you create what's basically a W with those fingers, and then you basically do the OK sign, and then it becomes white power. I've told the story multiple times. When I was a kid in Georgia, there was a picture of for about 2 years, I lived in rural Georgia, which, by the way, you want to know one reason why I'm the person I am today? That was those 2 years in Georgia. Dear rural Georgia. Anyway, so I was looking at a picture of the football team, and I noticed there was a whole bunch of the white guys on the football team holding up the OK sign with their fingers spread wide. And I was like, what's that? Now, I'm a white guy. So white guys will tell you white guy things that they don't realize that you're going to be abhorred by. And they said, oh, that's a white power symbol. This is back in 1982, 83. That's a white power symbol. What you do is you do it like that, where you spread your fingers and it says white power. And if anyone questions what you're doing, you look at them and say, we're just doing the OK sign. That was back then. We know it's a white power sign now. We all do. As a matter of fact, we had 4 years of Trump encouraging it. For God's sakes, you had Stephen Miller do it. You had people come into the press room and do the white power sign. It was something that they did a lot of because they were racist jackasses. That's why. Well, that is why there is a very odd picture of Senator Roger Chamberlain. This is the Republican out of is it Lionel Lakes? Yeah. And he's it's a freeze frame picture where he's basically, you know, he's expressing the concept of zero, which now, if we're doing the traditional zero, that's basically you kind of take all your fingers across and you put it on your thumb and you go zero, zero, or as we can call it now, a Bob Kroll, zero. So you that's how you do it. But he didn't do a zero like that. As a matter of fact, his zero looks a hell of a lot like the white power okay sign, including his fingers spread wide. So I have to ask the question, and thanks to Aaron May Quaid, who brought this one to my attention, and it should be reminded there was a story he did in the Minnesota Reformer. He's retweeted Nazis and promoted white nationalist content. He seems to be flashing the white power sign. So either Roger Chamberlain is a complete and total drooling monkey that basically doesn't know that how to do the zero sign. He could be stupid. I mean, have we got an update? Patrick, give us an update. Is Roger Chamberlain stupid? Do we have that information in yet? Or does that remain to be seen?
I will leave the listeners to make that judgment, but I think the answer is probably yes.
Okay, he could be stupid. Or he is just, he does that symbol so much he doesn't know how not to do it. I don't know. I'm looking at the image, and if you go to Aaron May Quaid's Twitter feed, you'll see the image. That's a white power hand gesture. That is a white power hand gesture. And of course, if Roger Chamberlain is like those football players back in 1982, he'll say, "You're overreacting. I just did a zero. I did an okay sign. Hee 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 hee. You pathetic little child." Anyway, that sure looks like a white power sign. God, it looks like a white. And let's say it kind of, if you look at the picture of Chamberlain, it kind of looks on brand, if you know what I mean. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's bring Gary on in here if we can. Gary, thank you very much for holding. Welcome on in.
Yeah, Matt, all this police corruption that's going on, it brings me back to the 60s with old man Bailey's machine, corrupt machine down there, and judges and lawyers are on the take. I heard all this stuff, and then they had the cops who put pressure on black men until he got false confessions. Then later on, he happened to be a Republican governor, shut down death row, and he investigated to find which ones are really innocent. And that's how bad it was. I heard other things like that, too. Like, a friend of mine was in a car down there in the 60s, and the guy driving paid off the cop $20 to get off a ticket. And anyways, I heard Daley sued the election to Nixon, too. Illinois carried Nixon in 68. Because he's afraid of Humphrey who cleaned up Minneapolis with that gangster Kid Can, got rid of him, and he knew he was worried about Humphrey cleaning up Chicago.
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the phone call. I a lot to unpack on that one. I'll let that go. All right. So 952-946-6205. So I want to bring up a topic I have mentioned before, and it's a prelude to something. We need to make sure we never forget what happened on January 6th. And this is very important that we do this. And to make sure we don't, I got to bring up a story that I've talked about a few times before, and that's the story of Smedley Butler. Now, if you don't know who Smedley Butler is, an interesting character in American history. FDR, when he took over as president, took the United States off the gold standard. And when they took the United States off the gold standard, a lot of the people who had the gold, who liked the fact that they had so much control over the economy and everything, were furious. One of those people was J.P. Morgan and some of the other people involved as well, some of the biggest bankers in the country. Well, they came up with this idea of overthrowing or forcing him either to put the United States back on the gold standard or overthrowing the government and installing a new president. This was early 1930s. Smedley Butler was a beloved military war hero who I believe was a general. He they approached Smedley Butler because they needed foot soldiers. You can't do something like this. You can't just do something like this without foot soldiers. And they went to Smedley Butler and asked Smedley Butler to basically rally the World War I veterans and have them march on the Capitol. What these bankers didn't realize is Smedley Butler was not about to sell out his own country. He ratted them out. Of course, they threw out a few fall guys, and no one of real major significance took the fall. But there was, clearly a lot of people were involved that were big up in banking. And the reason I bring this up is that we need to make sure we step back and realize what exactly happened on 1/6. That this was not just a crowd of people that got out of control. That this was undeniably an attempt to overthrow the government of the United States of America. Now, one of the reasons why this is top of mind for me still right now is I just finished watching the exceptional documentary Q Into the Storm, where it talked about QAnon. And this guy, this documentary, and it's 6 parts, and I want to warn you beforehand, the people involved in this whole thing are just some really unpleasant human beings. All the people that are there that are involved in this, they're just unpleasant. But this documentary is exceptional because it shows how Q really came out of nowhere and became the embodiment of the disillusioned masses. They became their leader. They believed in him. And there's a reason why a lot of QAnon flags and Q supporters were part of that storming of the U.S. Capitol, is because this was part of the coordinated attack. Now, I don't want to give away the whole thing. It's a 6-hour long documentary. I highly encourage it. The path this guy takes with this documentary is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. Just sitting down and starting to figure out, it's like, can I figure out who Q is, to actually taking the path. And then, of course, he is there on January 6th with the crew that's going through. And it is very interesting. He does basically figure out who Q is. He figures out who's been posting. But he also brings up this guy, and there's a guy named Code Monkey who's the guy that owns 8chan's Kid. And this is a guy who was part of this whole story, and you got to go watch the whole story. But he's part of the whole story, and he's fairly well known and through the internet community. Code Monkey is, and he was making his own post. I mean, there's after the election, he started making his own posts. And at the end of this, and this is not ruining the documentary or anything for you, but at the end of this, he's making the point that on the day of the 6th, he had some inside information from the powers that be, and he posted a whole bunch of stuff about how Mike Pence had betrayed Donald Trump. Mike Pence was evil and wrong. And I stopped for a quick second because earlier in there you hear that this guy, Ron Watkins, he is working with the Trump campaign and other Trump advisors, other people that are working within the Corsi and these people that have been working within the Trump circle. And you say to yourself, wait a second here. Okay, so you're telling me this guy on his own was posting Mike Pence is a traitor stuff on 1/6, which clearly infuriated the crowd. And once again, I step back and I realize, as you go back to Smedley Butler and you go back to what they tried to do with FDR, the reason that didn't work is because they did not have the foot soldiers. But take a look at what exactly happened here on 1/6. Trump riles. They knew they had lost. They knew that there was no way in the world that they could win the presidency unless they overthrew the government of the United States. That was the only way they could do it. So what you needed to have, and I'm not saying the people that showed up on 1/6 knew they were part of this, But the unruly mob that might or might not be aware of what's going on, that is a needed element if you're going to try to pull something like this off. And so all these people thought they were going there to just support Donald Trump. The reality is they ended up being the weapon that they aimed at the U.S. government. And like I said, I have no doubt that these people probably weren't aware of the larger plan in place. But the reality is that they became the weapon of choice. You have Trump and a lot of Republicans pushing these people here. You have far-right media pushing this idea. You have Trump saying march on the Capitol. You not only have that, you have Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys actually doing military maneuvers. You have the layout of the Capitol having been leaked to these people. You have clearly people looking to capture people, looking to take hostages that are attacking the Capitol, who were attacking the Capitol. And if you watch the Jordan Klepper on another thing, the Jordan Klepper special where he talks about going into the Trump verse, and he talks about how he was there. He was there on 162, and he noticed the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, they took off before Trump told them to take off. They were marching on the Capitol before they were told to march on the Capitol. They knew what was going on. They knew what was going on. The defense secretary did not send in the troops. They refused to send in the troops. The Capitol Police seem to have been getting conflicting orders themselves on what they should and should not do. You have clearly a conspiracy to overthrow the government. No, it's not a conspiracy. You had a strike to overthrow the government. And it came down to, the only reason this thing did not succeed is because of a handful, and I do mean a handful, of security personnel who were able to hold these people back because they were stupid idiots that stormed the Capitol, hold these people back, drive them down different hallways, get them out of the way while they got the senators and the House members out of the Congress. And they were down that room. There was a point, though, even at that point, as Lauren Boebert is giving people, Nancy Pelosi's here, Nancy Pelosi's here, as she's giving out detailed response of where exactly the Speaker of the House is as this is going on. Like I said, there are clearly people in the Republican Party involved in this. You have these people locked in the secure bunker underneath the Capitol, and the people that were attacking were saying, gas them. Which makes you wonder, did they actually have gas? Was this the plan? And it was only at this point where the people in the White House, who once again, through Pence, through all the Republican leadership, threw them into this mix as well. They didn't care. They were only looking to overturn the election and install Donald Trump as the president of the United States. And it was only when it came to the point where, well, we're going to end up having to kill a lot of these people to do this, that finally, they called in the military. That when Maryland and Virginia's governors sent in their National Guard to go help, they realized things had gotten out of control. They could not stop this. They were in a secure location. So the only option was a lot of dead congressmen and senators, or else it was over. And that was the moment. They, I think, had the intent of trying to do that until they realized, oh, we lost our window. And that's when Trump comes on out. I love you. You're wonderful. But you gotta go home now. Trust me, this was an actual attempt to overthrow the government. This was because Trump knew it was the only way, and his enablers knew it was the only way that they could win. And once I said this a lot of times, I said, if you try to do this, you will never be able to have another election in this country again. Because who would ever, you can't throw out an election, install him, and then say, but the next time we'll let that one stand. No, you will never be able to do it again. The end of American democracy was that close. A handful of law enforcement is what stopped this country from falling. And every single one of us should realize this wasn't just an unruly mob. The mob was the weapon. But they were being controlled by people who are planting information online, who are getting them the background information they needed, who are making sure that the police and the military was not there to get in their way. And then they sent them on the Capitol. And the hope is that they would, sure, a few people might die, but at the end of the day, we'll force them into making Trump the president of the United States for another term. When you realize what exactly actually happened, not a conspiracy, what actually happened, not only does every one of these brick, dumb, stupid idiots that were part of that mob deserve to go to jail for the rest of their lives, but we'd better be starting to haul out some of these leaders, including the acting defense secretary who clearly knew what was going on. He needs to be dragged out in cuffs and tried for treason. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It is not something we can ever allow these people to redefine. This was an attempt to overthrow the government of the United States, and for the grace of God, this country still stands today. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We cannot dismiss this. I mean, this clearly was being coordinated on a larger level. And like I said, what they want to do is say, well, it was just a mob. No. The mob was the weapon. Like Smedley Butler was trying to get recruited back in the 1930s to lead a mob on the Capitol. The people that were behind the mob are the people we need to be arresting. And it's clear. There are multiple people, including multiple current sitting Congress people and senators who were part of this. The former acting defense secretary was part of this. A lot of people in the Trump campaign were part of this. And these people need to be arrested. I mean, if you can just piece together, I mean, if I can do it by just watching, one or two documentaries and realize, holy God, this thing was actually a much larger deal than I think people are realizing. Some people have got to be arrested. And you realize how close this country came to actually, falling to a rabid mob that only wanted to install Trump and his kids for the leaders of this country for the next 50 years. Think about that. Like some kind of weird North Korean setup. Brad is in Robbinsdale. Welcome on in, Brad.
Oh, yes. I think I might have a clue to the identity of Q. Now, in metal logic, Q is the symbol for the set of rational numbers. So I think it's obvious that Q is a countable transfinite set that's a proper subset of the continuum. But you can take some consolation in the fact that the set of irrational numbers is infinitely larger than the set of rational numbers.
Well, Brad, I'm just going to tell you this. I have no idea what you just said. Thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. I have no idea what the heck you just said, but I will say this. If you watch Q Into the Storm, you get a pretty good idea who exactly Q is. And it's a dude. It's not some kind of mythical, numerical thing. It's one person. It's one guy. All right, I'll let you go watch that. Can you imagine if that would have actually happened? Let me explain what would have happened. If say that they would have captured a whole bunch of senators and congresspeople, and they would have managed to somehow convince people to basically install Trump as the president, and we'll figure things out later, which would never be figured out. Eventually, the Republicans would probably have in a state where the Republicans were in charge, like Texas, they would have probably evicted every Democratic congressperson from that state and installed Republicans in their place to then vote out all the rest of the Democrats out of the House with a loyalty pledge to Trump and his family as the first priority. And people like Ilhan Omar, people like Barack Obama, they would have been arrested under Trump's America. If this would have gone through. I mean, we are talking about, this is not like, oh, well, apples and oranges. No, if this actually had succeeded, this country would have ceased to exist as we know it. It would not be anything like it was. We would actually probably in Minnesota be begging Canada to take us in as another province, along with a few other states. This is dead serious, and every person involved, including the ignorant rubes that were used as a weapon, whether they knew they were being or not being, every one of them needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And like I said, go watch that Q into the Storm. But once again, I do want to warn you, the people involved in this whole thing, they are not – there is some ugliness here in these people, and it is hard to kind of – but at the end of it, you kind of figure it out what exactly has been going on. 952-946-6205. Sven Sundgaard from Bring Me the News joins us. We talk weather when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. A reminder once again, we've been talking about it all day, the special Earth Day show with Native Roots Radio coming up at 6 o'clock. 2 hours. They are going to be talking about, of course, Earth Day, a lot of Earth issues. Indigo Girls are going to be performing. That's at 6 to 8 o'clock tonight. Robert Pilot, Wendy, Ogama, right here on AM 950, 6 to 8 tonight. So make sure you stay with us for that. Sven Sundgaard is the weatherman extraordinaire. Well, we're going to get to Sven. We'll get to Sven in a second. We're working on getting him pulled up as we speak. Technology, it's an amazing thing. One of the things I have noticed about the right in this country, and this is another reason why I wanted to bring up the 1/6 thing. One of the things I have realized is that the stuff that they are most scared of, they try to dismiss and downplay most of all. Oh, that was just a few people. Oh, that was no big deal. Oh, that was really Antifa. That was not us. That 1/6, we need to make sure we put this. This was one of the biggest threats to American democracy in the history of this country. A megalomaniac, narcissistic man-child who has been handed everything in his entire life. Everything in his entire life. Losing an election. Fair and square. Who basically, and once again, I want to remind people that he started early on insisting, oh, I didn't lose. He was saying that back in September, October. He lost fair and square, and just his desire to never have to admit he lost, and the people around him who always were trying to make him look, make him feel good and, put him on a pedestal a la like a Kim Jong-un or something like that. We came close. Do not allow these people to redefine what happened on 1/6 as anything else than one of the greatest threats to American democracy in the history of this country. 952-946-6205. Sven Sundgaard is kind enough to join us right now. Sven, I want to thank you. You found a northern Minnesota tornado map that you posted. That actually,
just for you.
Well, thank you. And you did. You could see the tornado that went by my family's cabin up in 1969, which, by the way, was part of a horrible outbreak of tornadoes in northern Minnesota that year. There was a whole bunch that seemed to, that, including a Category 5 that went through northern Minnesota. That
very
was
rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very rare.
So, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it is surprising to me that there have been that many up there, because it really is not territory where you expect to see too much tornado activity.
No, not at all. But there's a lot to knock down, of course, with the forest. So it would be a sight. I mean, you'd want to see it from a distance. But, we're used to seeing tornadoes on the plains. Very rare, actually, that we have footage of tornadoes going through heavily forested areas. So that would be a totally different looking tornado.
The wildest one was the one that skipped over Electric Fetus, where it went it came through into South Minneapolis, hit Electric Fetus, then kind of went over the downtown, and then smacked into North Minneapolis.
Yeah, so is this the one you're talking about that was like maybe, 10, 11, 12 years ago?
Yeah, not that long ago now, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was working that day. I was not actually on weather duty. I was doing a report, and I had just gotten back, and it was like midday, I think, or mid-afternoon or something, not prime tornado time. And I was getting emails from people saying, somebody from our assignment desk had come over and said, is there a tornado going up like 35 into downtown? I'm like, unlikely. And then all of a sudden, I looked at my email and I had a few people sending me pictures from working downtown, you know, in various buildings, sending me pictures of just like sort of a weak looking debris cloud going by their office buildings. And I'm like, what? Yeah, that was a bizarre storm.
Well, and it does happen. I mean, and like I said, who doesn't like vinyl at Electric Fetus? I mean, it's always nice to get that occasionally. But, you know, it knocked out the back wall of that building. And, I mean, that was a relatively small tornado, but, I mean...
Oh, yeah, it was not a big tornado. I don't know if it was even a one.
It really surprised me. I lived in Iowa. I got to see a lot of tornadoes down there. I much prefer tornadoes than hurricanes because hurricanes wipe out large swaths. But the reality is...
Oh, yeah, and flooding and everything else.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. But when you see a tornado, I mean, they just will, you know, for that little strip, whatever, how big it is, anything in its path is gone. It is amazing that such a phenomenon happens.
Well, yeah, and we all have seen these weird things where, like, a plastic straw can be inserted into a tree trunk or a tire. And then, you know, like, somebody, I was just watching not that long ago, where this devastating F4, EF4 or 5 tornado in Alabama or something, it just flattened this person's house. Everything was destroyed. But then a dresser that was in their room was placed out of the house, but placed completely upright like it should be, hundreds of feet away. All the pictures, socks, everything were in the drawer still.
Wow.
You know, so I think that's why they fascinate us. They're this violent thing that we have zero control over and still are, you know, while we can predict a storm that might produce, you know, like we can predict a severe weather day, we can issue a tornado warning, we can't tell where that thing is exactly going to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of, you know, not to get too philosophical, in our modern times, that fascinates us, things that we still don't know.
We like to control things, and the fact that there
we
are,
love to control things. Yeah, and ruin them.
Exactly. And the fact that you are somewhat subjected to what's going to happen is a feeling that, you know, people like to kind of confront head on.
Well, that's what I've always told people, why people are obsessed with weather. We claim it more in the Midwest, but really everybody around the world has weather stories. And it's the most ancient thing in humanity, is because it's the one thing we have zero control over. Even if you can predict it, we don't have control over it. We can warm up the planet, but, you know, because, you know, we're all trying to survive, whether we are hunters or farmers, we relied on weather and seasons. And yeah, I think that's just, it's an ancient thing that's just in our DNA.
Yeah. Well, at least today we understand the cold fronts and stuff like that, as opposed to, you know, eek, what's going on, you know, the terror of lightning. But
the Little Prairie episode where a blizzard comes out of nowhere and kills people.
Well, yeah, the reality, though, is that we know the science behind it. We still can't predict it, though. We can do pretty well, but there's still so many things about weather that are completely out of the realm of our ability to be able to kind of, you know, control or grasp, or at least be able to definitively say, well, there's tornadoes and there's going to be one that's coming down Maple Street. You know, we just, element.
And any meteorologist will tell you, we don't want our computer models to be perfect, because then that would be boring. You know, set aside the safety issue, but, you know, forecasting weather in Minnesota every day is something different. Well, you know, we have that one week in October or in May that's boring, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's not been boring now. I mean, I've and by the way, if you're not following Sven on YouTube, the videos you do, I love how you break down the weather, especially the kind of the larger patterns and how the air circulates and moves. We are finally moving this glob of cold air from the Arctic out of the way, and we're seeing the result today. Today is a gorgeous day.
Yeah, absolutely. It was 64 last I checked. We kind of maxed out there and leveled off for the last few hours. But hey, we'll take it. 61 is the average high. So it's above normal today, actually. But the sunniest day we've had in 2 weeks.
Yes.
You know, since we've been in this rut. You know, we've had some sun. Like last weekend was nice. But, you know, there were still clouds passing through. This was the sunniest day. And I think people and trees alike noticed it fully. And yeah, we are finally seeing a change in the pattern. Now, don't think there's not going to be more cool days, but I mean, the consistent cold that we've been in and dreariness, that is ending. this weekend's not going to be the most beautiful, but the pattern is definitely shifting. I've been talking, as you say, in my videos for over a week now that this advertised pattern change in the models is finally happening, where we've got this huge ridge. Basically, that just means that the air is flowing straight north up into Alaska and then straight south in the western states. And that literally is like the roller coaster of cold for us, draining everything out of the Arctic. And there have been these minor fluctuations, but the actual pattern, that anomalous ridge, is finally leveling out. And it's actually going to set us up for kind of a stormy pattern for the middle of next week.
Well, and it should be something you mentioned as well, is that even though we've been cooler lately, we still are well above normal for April still, as far as temperature, right?
Still 3 degrees above average, which tells you almost more than experiencing the warm days that we had, more so how hot it was, how extreme that was, that we could handle most of these. I think 9 of these last 14 days have been below normal, and still we have this 3 degree surplus, and we will end the month above normal. That is a guarantee at this point.
You do have a kind of an odd thing. As nice as today is, you still say there is a chance for some parts of Minnesota to see some snow this weekend.
Yes, Sunday. It looks like the models are still kind of all over the place. The time of year with the most variability in a forecasting a snowfall event is early and late in the season, because there's so many things that affect snowfall this time of year. You know, the timing is a big one. You know, if you get snow showers in the middle of the day, even when it's cloudy, the sun's still getting through and the ground is still warm. Mm-hmm. So this time of year, to really get snow to pile up, you got to have it happen at night or early or late in the day. So the models still are differing on the timing of the precip coming through. It's looking like the Twin Cities, at least, is going to probably see more liquid than anything. But northern Minnesota could see some snowfall. It's not going to be a huge event for anybody, but we're talking a couple inches. I'm calling it kind of the last gasp of this pattern that it just mm-hmm. wants to say, okay, I might be leaving, but here you go. And then we're going to jump up into the 70s on Monday for much of the southern part of the state.
Well, and it should be mentioned, too, it's that is, I mean, we once again are just getting, you know, conditioned to this as being the new normal, because reality is, you know, people who've been from the Iron Range, who've lived in northern Minnesota, snow was common until May. I mean, and ice out. I mean, all these lakes being iced out already in northern Minnesota, I mean, that's early. So it is kind of one of those things where you're getting it, but it's almost like a small reminder of the way things used to be.
Well, and that's where I've kind of looked at this. I mean, I don't like the last couple of weeks have been miserable, right? Yeah. But I've been kind of talking about it as sort of a correction, because it was so warm that, you know, nature responded, because it's normal to get 1 or 2 really warm days in March or early April. But we had 5 days above 70 degrees, which is unheard of at that time of year. And we saw, like, the trees and everything sprouted. Had that continued and then it got as cold as it has, that could have been a disaster for migrating birds, certain plants, even native plants. So this is sort of nature's check on that. 2 weeks of pretty chilly weather that really kind of slowed down that process. We really needed that. So as miserable as it was for us humans, nature, we needed that. You know, and as we warm up and make the climate more volatile, those natural checks, you know, will not happen as well anymore.
Well, and you alluded to this in one of your videos, is that if it's a natural growing plant, you probably are okay not having to cover it, because it's, you know, it's kind of used to this. It was the stuff that you're taking outside that's not used to this. Those are the ones you either have to cover up or take back inside, because you're right. The plants are used to, especially in Minnesota in April, March and April, they're used to a fluctuating temperature scheme.
They're hardy. Yeah. You know, even trees that have small leaves like maples and box elder, they could handle, you know, we got down to 29, I think, in the Twin Cities. And outside of the metro, obviously, it was a little cooler. But even those 26, 27 degrees, first of all, it's only happening for a few hours. And the coldest night we had, which was Tuesday night, I believe, there was still a breeze, too. Mm-hmm. So all those things help, you know, those native plants really can handle that. But it is funny to me how every year, people in April, even people who are from here, are like, is it safe to put out? Come on, you know better. you're never safe until mid-May, truly.
You just want to push it. Don't push it. You got to take it easy.
It's important to note that even if it's not going to be below freezing anymore, a lot of the plants that we put in our gardens or vegetables, tomatoes are a tropical plant.
Yes.
And a lot of flowers are tropical plants. So even though they might survive the frost. You don't want to put them into ground that's 40 degrees. That's too cold. Or if the daytime temperatures are going to be spending 75% of the time below 55, there's no point because they're not going to grow. So you just got to wait. I know we're all impatient, but we really are in that. It's kind of like the pandemic. We're really in the home stretch.
Yes.
You just got to, but don't blow it by putting out all your tomato plants and then they'll all die. It's the same parallel to the pandemic.
Don't pretend
it's over.
I got gutsy last year. I put my tomatoes out on May 10th and they survived. But I was like, yeah, I was risking a lot there.
You were asking for it.
I was asking for it. Next week, I did see that you are, I mean, now it's kind of time for us to transition into those spring storm patterns. And it does look like a pretty heavy duty storm from north to south is going to be coming across the country.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people have been commenting on social media, they're like, can we not just come out of this and have a few 70 degree days without thunderstorms? And like,
nope.
again, are you new here? It's just, you know, that's kind of we just spring in Minnesota. It does look like we are. So I was talking about we're going to be in literally the opposite pattern of what we had last week. And again, to visually see this, go back and watch my video from yesterday where I show how we're literally in the opposite upper level pattern next week, where instead of this ridge in the west, we're going to be in a deep trough in the west, southwest. So that means literally the air from the Pacific sort of descends southeast. It bottoms out in Arizona, and then air in the middle of the atmosphere is then shot from southwest to northeast towards Minnesota. And that brings in very warm air. It also brings in the humidity pretty quickly from the Gulf of Mexico. And that sets us up for a stormy pattern when any minor cool front kind of rides along that pattern. So we really have a chance of thunderstorms. It looks like now late Monday, Tuesday, and probably Wednesday next week. And, you know, the nature of thunderstorms is the precip can vary, but there will definitely be places in Minnesota that will see 1 to 2 inches of rainfall next week in some of these thunderstorms. So, you know, here we go, right into it.
Go to YouTube, watch Sven's videos there. Of course, Bring Me the News has them as well. I post them on social media. Watch the one from yesterday, get you up to date, and we'll keep an eye out for your updates for the weekend, especially with that snow that might be happening in Minnesota, okay?
And happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day, my friend.
Remember, we're a part of this planet, not apart from the planet.
Absolutely. We don't have any other place to go. I've seen Mars.
Nope.
It doesn't look
no,
nice.
No, I know people are like, oh, but Mars. Yeah, no.
I don't like potatoes that much, especially those potatoes.
So, I don't like North Dakota that much. That's almost like Mars to me. No, I'm kidding.
Well,
beautiful place.
Oh, well, all cards and letters to Sven. Sven Sundgaard, once again, bringmethenews.com at YouTube as well. Sven, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a lovely weekend, everyone.
You take care. Spotlight that interview. We'll come on back, wrap up the show when we do return with the Minnesota Coronavirus Update. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. State health officials on Thursday urged continued COVID-19 testing of K-12 students, especially those involved in youth sports, but relaxed a requirement on mask wearing in outdoor competitions. Masks are now optional for athletes in outdoor games or matches, but still required for indoor competitions and for anyone on the sidelines or on the benches. The announcement came as the state reported another 10 COVID deaths and 1,973 infections of the coronavirus that causes the respiratory disease. Pandemic totals in Minnesota have reached 7,054 deaths, as well as 562,420 infections. A weekly report released each Thursday showed more than 1,000 infections involving K-12 students in the week ending April 17th, one of the highest one-week totals of the entire pandemic. Remember when people were saying, oh, kids can't get this? Yeah, they can. Just this week, we saw the number of school-related COVID-19 cases and students exceed the high set in November during the fall surge, said State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm. We are making encouraging progress with vaccines, but there are still many Minnesotans who are susceptible, and we need to do what we can to slow down the spread. Testing is recommended every 2 weeks for K-12 students, but weekly for athletes and 3 days before games or matches. Health officials on Thursday urged coaches and referees to seek routine testing as well. The state sought to broaden access on Thursday by offering mail-in COVID-19 testing kits to any schools or sports organizations that requested them. What do you do if you go to a game? I just had a friend of mine say they went to a baseball game, and there's a whole bunch of parents that are sitting there, no mask, just hanging out, and you're almost kind of like, what are you doing? what are you doing? I mean, just – I get it. You might have a few people who are vaccinated. Maybe all of you are vaccinated. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. But the reality is with all the different variants, you'd think you'd want to be careful, especially when, you know, now they really are saying the people who have been sick for a long-term COVID illness – the long-term health care, they're very concerned about the long-term health conditions of people that might have, quote-unquote, recovered from coronavirus. So we want to find all the cases we can so we can find and interrupt those chains of transmission, said Malcolm. Detailed genomic sequencing of positive tests in March had identified the outbreak centered around youth sport activities in Carver County, driven by the more infectious variant of the English variant. Now it's been responsible for an estimated 60% of the new infections in Minnesota. It doesn't surprise you, does it? You get youth sports that are going on. You have touring teams. Okay, so you have a team, say it's the local team. I used Carver County Chaska. So you're the Chaska local team, and I'm just making this up, so don't anyone get upset. But I'm just using this as an example. So Chaska is your local team, but you got three kids who are part of other touring teams. And they get exposed in Chaska, and then they're going on out. And especially, once again, you going out to rural Minnesota, there is no face mask. There's nothing. And so is it really a big surprise? Hospitalizations for COVID-19 have increased in Minnesota over the past month. The state on Thursday reported that 683 people with COVID were in inpatient beds in Minnesota hospitals, 196 in intensive care, including my friend who's still there. All my best, my buddy. I hope you're recovering here. The median age for hospitalized patients has dropped from the 60s to the 50s at this point, which is a sign of a vaccination for the older population as well as also things changing. There you go, Minnesota coronavirus update. Reminder: stay with us for the next 2 hours. Robert Pilot, Wendy Pilot, Ogema. It is going to be the Earth Day special, a special 2-hour broadcast of Native Roots Radio. I am awake. Stay with us right here on AM 950. Happy Earth Day. Reminder, we only got this one, so let's make sure it stays safe. Till tomorrow, see ya.